snack.
Do you usually do this late night sometimes?
That's...
No, that's right. Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Ministry Booster Podcast. Hanging out in the garage, my buddy Daniel Kim, buddy, everybody.
Hello, hello, hello. Thanks for the invitation. Excited to be at Tulsa, Oklahoma today.
Dude, how are you liking snowy Tulsa late at night, my man?
Like, you know,
this
man,
is,
I would
maybe
say,
not what you signed up for.
Well, I mean, coming from Chicago, we believe in 2020 rule, but
yeah.
I would say Oklahoma people are a little soft, but it's okay. I feel good about myself. That's what I'm going to say.
I do love you were here. So yeah. We told the folks last couple of weeks that we've had some of our favorite young leaders in youth ministry. Mm-hmm. We're hanging out. We're talking about some of the things that are next, the conversations in ministry.
Right.
But we're here at the house hanging out and got the text that school is canceled. And all of the northern guys are like, what do you mean?
It's
not even sticking to the ground yet.
Right,
yeah, yeah,
right,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. Chicago people are a little more tough, I would say. Right?
I'm a believer. You're a little more ready. You're a little more prepared for it. Ready
That's
to
right.
make it happen. So, oh, my
That's
gosh,
right.
man. Well, Dan, we are so excited to have you,
thank you.
Today. Songyo, excited to have you today.
It's my legal name, guys.
Legal name.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. He
yes,
told me
sir.
To. But to talk a little bit about youth ministry, but I think also some of the things just related to ministering in the city, ministering as a young person, ministering in a college town. Like some of the things that I love about both your story of growing up and following the Lord and serving in the church, but also like this unique spot that you're in that's like a major city next to a major Christian university with some major opportunities and just kind of what has kind of been laid before you. And before we get into, I would love to hear a little bit more of your story.
Yes, sir.
I want to hear a little bit like, what about Chicago do you love? Because you wound up in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of folks, we're going to be in Chicago for Youth Pastor Summit.
Right.
What are your favorite things about the Windy City?
You know, man, I love Chicago for many reasons. It's not the weather.
Okay, yeah. In spite of the weather, he still persists. Yeah, yeah.
You know, I would say, as a guy coming from overseas, I'll share more about it. I was born in Korea, raised in Japan. Just seeing just diversity of people and the culture that's represented.
Yeah.
Right? Like in the city and also even in the suburbs, I would say that's like such a beautiful part where you just get to go to so many churches and it's just what heaven would look like.
Yeah.
And I think that's just the beauty of being in Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I think it's got to be in some ways paints pictures for creativity.
Absolutely.
Paints pictures for maybe innovation. But again, the beauty of the diversity of the ways in which folks are gathered. Like, it's just hard to, like, you can't really manufacture that. Like, you
that's
have to
true.
Find it or discover it. And
that's
so
right.
Tell me a little bit, because you're serving at Grace.
That's right.
So tell me a little bit about the church. How did you end up there?
Yeah, so right now I'm serving at church, Gospel Life in Carroll Stream. We actually have three campuses. So I kind of oversee all student ministry at Gospel Life right now. I was born in South Korea, raised in Japan, and I went to undergrad at Kansas State University.
Okay, yeah, you tell us. Okay,
sorry, I'm going a little before that.
I want to know. Yeah, how does a young man from Japan end up at Kansas State?
Right,
like,
right.
Toto, we are in Kansas.
That's right.
Yeah, how?
Well, man, just to be honest, I went to English school growing up, right?
Okay,
so.
Yeah.
Graduated, I was not a good studious student.
But did you go to Kansas before? Like, there's nothing in Kansas. Like,
well,
of all the states.
It did have 99% acceptance rate.
Oh, okay, I got you.
So it was the cheapest out-of-state tuition.
Okay.
So my dad was like, hey, that's probably the only school you can go.
Strike a deal. Okay, go Wildcats. Yeah.
But I loved it, man. I loved it. I think the people and the hospitality of the Midwest people. And I mean, you would know it in Tulsa, right?
Yeah.
There's just something different about that. And I've always kind of, I feel like I was always a little bit too extrovert for the Japanese culture.
Okay.
I kind of almost felt like I came home in Manhattan.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I mean, nothing, no really crazy reason behind why going to K-State. It was just, you know, had a easy to get in and loved every moment there. A lot of great friends. And then
came to study. Yeah. What brought you?
Oh,
I
changed my major like 12 times.
Nice. Well, that's a good way to maximize
the
dollars.
But I think I was BizEcon. I remember that was my major. Yeah,
love it.
Because I think it was 2017. I watched there was a movie called Crazy Rich Asian.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And my friend, I was motivated.
You really?
I'll get a degree and I'll fly to Singapore.
Other people saw rom com. You saw motivation.
Brother.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
I was like, yes, that'll be me.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that. Thank you, John Chu. Yeah.
And then But, you know, in 2019, I was in New Jersey visiting my aunt. She lives in New Jersey, Pell Park, and I got saved. That was just like a moment where like I encountered the Lord. My life just transformed. And
so as a like late teen.
Yeah, man. I was okay. I think I was 21, 22 or something like that.
What happened in Pell Park? Was did your family grow up Christian, not Christian?
Or? Yeah, my dad was an elder, but faith was never my thing. I was never into it. It was my dad's thing, not really my thing.
Okay.
Nothing dramatic. It was just not for me.
Yeah.
Right. And one of the spring break, my buddy and I visited Chicago, which is crazy because I'm now
there, man. That's it. Yeah.
At the school called Wheaton College, right? It was a Christian school. Now, actually, my church right now is like 5 minutes away from Wheaton College now. And I went to visit there, and one of my best friends from Chicago, he was attending there, and me and my buddy visiting from state school, we're like, hey, like, why are you still going to Wheaton College? He's like, I love it here. And one of the day, he said, hey, Daniel, I can't do something at 10 a.m. because I have to go to chapel. And my buddy and I just froze, and we looked at him. We're like, man,
well, yeah, yeah.
Chapel? Like, bro, this is not a Christian private high school anymore. What are you doing? And I just made fun of him.
Bro, you're 20. You're free.
I know. Yeah. I'm like, what are you doing? And then he looked at me, said this one sentence that I just could not forget. It was like, hey, Daniel, I think there's something more in life than you imagine. And he just said it so nonchalantly. He was laughing, and just this question just never, you know, stayed away from my head for 6 months, right?
Yeah.
And that was a summer. Okay. And then that summer, I was like wanting to wrestle with this question of something more. And then remember that my dad, my mom, they were devoted Christians. So first time in 5 to 6 years, I was like, you know, let's try out a church. So I went to my Google. I looked up Korean church near me. There was one 2.1 mile away.
Yeah.
I put on my, no AirPods back then. So it was like my string headphones. I walked 2 miles to a Korean church and I heard the gospel, and the rest is history.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dude, that's
pretty cool.
Again, the testimony of a friend, the positive peer pressure, and the importance of local churches being Google listed.
I mean, that's
the postmodern parable, right?
I agree, man. It's one of those. Absolutely.
It's the friend called out something in you that you needed to hear,
right?
And the local church was accessible in a way in which we needed to find,
right?
Okay, young Spurgeon. What was preached that day? What was the message? Do you remember?
Well, I remember it. It was actually
little kids never remember, but you were 21, so maybe you remember.
Well, to be fair, it was a Korean church, all right. Okay, so it was actually I got saved in Korean, my friends.
Okay, yeah, that's good. That's good.
I think it was Ananias and Sapphira. I think it was a story of that.
Yeah.
But I think at the end there was just such a clear gospel message of how God wants every single piece of us. And for me, it was like more like during the response moment, just kind of picturing God, just like there's a story of a prodigal son, like him just standing, embracing, being in my hardest moments when I was indifferent. Like, that was just such a beautiful moment. And, you know, and my life changed after that day.
That's amazing, man.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so that gets us up a little bit. How do you go from young believer Daniel 21 ended up serving at a church? What was the journey there to
got
get you
saved? And then God saved my life, and then it was 2018, and then I went back to K-State. I was almost done with my study, and during those 6 months, like, it's just hard to express my in words, but like, and there was just so much desire for me to study God's word, and I was like, man, like, I feel like there's something more in my life.
That became your study.
I think that was a moment where I got the internal calling. I wouldn't say calling as a pastor. It was internal calling for me to go and study in depth with the word.
Okay.
So I call my friend, because remember my friend Wheaton College, who helped me to get it, you know.
There's something more to your life. Gospel, there's something more to this book. This I like this friend. We're going to come back to this friend again.
I know, we will.
And
he introduced me to a school called Moody Bible in Chicago. Okay. He said, hey, there's a school that, you know, that's affordable for Christian education. You should look into it. And, you know, I looked into it. I loved it. And after 6 months, I prayed about it. And I called my parents. I said, hey, like, I know I'm this is not what you have imagined, but I think I want to transfer the Moody Bible to just study.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's missionary, pastor, teacher. I don't know what it is, but I think God is stirring my heart. Yeah.
Wow.
And they were upset. They were like, you know, or like, no, just graduate, get a job, and maybe go to seminary later.
Yeah.
But, you know, God was making it so evident in my life of like, he was just pushing me out of K-State and saying, go start your college again in Chicago. But then I had to start as a freshman again, which was a concern of my parents.
Is it a setback? Are we starting over instead of finishing?
But, you know, but it was just so evident. And And then I remember like a week later, my dad calls me and he said, hey, if the Lord tells you to go, you got to go. And I packed my bag and I went back to Chicago, Illinois with two suitcases, no friends, no connection, no cousins. I'm international student, right?
Yeah. Just dropping bags at the dorms, just ready to go. Yeah.
I still get choked up when I go to O'Hare Airport. I'm like, man, I remember how I got it. I remember how I got to O'Hare in 2019. So and then I started college again as a freshman and kind of stuck around.
College as a freshman again, just in time for COVID too.
Dude, right? That's right. I was a COVID grad.
That's one of the parts almost like monastic for you in some ways of like literally like the call to study at a new school during a very difficult season. What are some of the things that you think God has done and is continuing to like produce out of you because of that? Like, are you seeing, I mean, maybe that was a necessary thing then, but is there even more fruit from that now?
Or? Absolutely. I would say the biggest word is resilience. Mm. And also, it sounds vague and, cliche, but I think it's resilience and faith, right? And whenever I read the book of Genesis, just the fact that Abraham had to leave just because God simply told him to leave.
Had to go.
And I really lived that life, right? And it was scary, but because I was able to make those hard decisions, now I get to reflect on what God has done in my life. Even in the hard moments when I'm like, man, I'm not understanding this in my job and personal life, I always go back to those moments like, man, like, when I was still obedient, he has given me every single thing that I need in my life. So it's a beautiful, it was hard. Don't get me wrong. It was really, really hard. And I can go more about it.
Way to talk about it. Because I think for so many folks, faith is just a really spiritual way to say patience.
Yeah.
But what I heard you say was that it's also a really important way to say provision. That
absolutely.
God will also provide.
100%.
Because I think for so many folks, faith is like, well, we'll hang around till something else happens, but we'll stay busy in the meantime and lose sight of the actual, the thing, like
that's
whatever
true.
We've been called to do, the depth, the study. And so that's powerful, man.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more what life at Moody was like, not to like, pedestal or criticize or whatever, but like, I just want to know, again, there's several parts of your life that we kind of talked about third culture stuff.
Absolutely.
But 100%. public school in Kansas.
That's right.
To Christian Bible school in Chicago.
Yeah.
Go.
Man. I know this is a safe space pastors.
How much culture clash? Like a little bit, not a lot, or unexpected?
It was very unexpected. Well, at Kansas State, I was actually also in a fraternity.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so I was really living out the extreme way of secular life. And
the
then
full college experience.
God drastically changed my life, which is great. Yeah. But now I have to go to one of the smallest schools.
Yes.
In the middle of Chicago without any friends. So it was hard, man.
Also, again, Manhattan, Kansas, which is nothing but K-State.
Right.
And then Moody Bible, which is like the smallest one of so many schools and one of our most major cities.
And I transferred in January, so I only had like 2 to 3 weeks to process this. And I'm like, have to get used to it.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was. And again, also at the same time, I'm also an international student.
Yeah.
So it's like, woo, trying to get used to this country and now it's a different city. So, it was hard. I think I struggle making friends, I would say, first semester, to be honest with you. But I think those are also a time where I got to connect with church. What's beautiful about Moody is not only about the student life, they really encourage the students to get plugged into church.
Okay.
So, and that time I got plugged into immigrant church because I got saved in a Korean church setting. I decided to immerse
myself. Did you look for another Korean church when you were looking for churches or were just kind of open to whatever you found?
I think it was open to, but then it happened to end in a Korean church. So I was there for a couple of years actually before coming to Gospel Life. But yeah, I mean, I love my life at Moody. I loved how they were so practical. In teaching those curriculums and studies that would actually work in practical settings in ministry, right? So those are really helpful. And then I also did 1 year extra study at Wheaton College too. So that was really helpful as well, which kind of got me to stick around in Chicago.
Chicagoland,
I would say, man, like one of the things that distinguished me and some other college students in ministry is like during college days, I was just serving and just getting a lot of great opportunities and reps while studying in college because Moody was so supportive in having practical experiences over the education.
Okay.
So those were such a good opportunity, I'd say, in Chicago.
Is that something that they promoted, encouraged, or just made space for? 'Cause I think that's one of the questions maybe to even ask you on this side of ministering as a young man in college, international student, what are some of the ways in which both the local church could or should be more considerate of connecting, supporting, creating community for both international students, but also ministry students? And I say that, I say that with like high personal interest.
Absolutely.
Being neighbor to a couple different Christian schools and one of them in particular being very globalized.
Really, yeah.
Like how do we do a better job? How has it done well? How do we do a better job?
Right.
Okay, I think that's one of the things that the church, I mean, could be a blessing. Yeah.
100%. So. You know, I think I see two ways. One is a school's way of, one thing that I think Moody did really well is this thing called practical Christian ministry. So every single student from freshman until senior, you're required every week to spend 2 hours in a practical ministry setting.
Okay.
Meaning it could be in a church, it could be in a nonprofit, it could be something in a education related. Like you have to serve in a volunteer setting that's related to your major. If it's youth min, you're doing a youth internship.
Okay.
Right?
So yeah.
I love that. It's like, and it was mandatory. You had to log those hours. So like, you know, we were actually fined if you didn't log it.
No excuses.
That's right. You got to do it. You got to do it. All the hard work. But when it comes to church side, man, I would say I just love those robust residency and internship programs in churches. And I know this sounds very cliche. And my dream and my vision of when people ask me, hey, Daniel, why are you in ministry? Like all these things like that. Obviously, it's because God has called me. But I also have this little vision and hope that, man, as an international student, as a third culture kid, I just want to be a pioneer who paved the way where international student was not afraid to step out of their comfort zone.
Mm.
And if there are more opportunities from bigger churches, small churches, whatever church setting, if they are able to spend maybe 2 or 3 hours with this young, you know, maybe English second language kids sometimes coming through and just really develop them, spend time with them and just really pour into them. I just want more Daniel Kims in the future too. So, and I just, and as the society and this country gets more diverse, especially in a big city like that, I just really want to see more ethnic leaders like myself just, you know, push through and pioneer ways
to
advance the kingdom of God.
Well, create those spaces, build those bridges, because I think that is, again, this is for every church in America that wishes they had more opportunity for college and young adult students.
Yes.
That may surprise them where it comes from.
Right.
And I also think for so many of our teenagers, and this is maybe some of the other part of the conversation. Mm-hmm. I mean, at least like, again, living here in Oklahoma, serving in North Carolina, Texas, there is a lot of like third culture kids that may either be, I mean, for in Oklahoma, Texas, there's a lot of Hispanic students who they are, you know, playing both the role of interpreter at home and then also trying to figure out who they are in the mix. And so Tulsa proper, we've got a large group of Burmese refugees that have like the Jinx High School is like, like the third largest ethnic group or fourth largest ethnic group in Jinx High School is actually like Zomi. So it's Burmese. And so like the ways in which that culture has impacted even in a public school and even in a community matters to our local churches. Like we actually have Zomi Baptist churches in Jinx America or whatever. Wow. And it's one of those like, like, wait, you know, but that's one of the things to know is that like, even in suburban areas, there is pockets of diversification that may be partners in ministry, but also like families in connection and community, to be more aware of in the ways in which they are in the lives of youth ministry in particular. Because that is one of the places, and we see it really notably, at least in the places that I've been, it's the kid whose parents maybe are first gen and they're second gen.
Right.
And so they're having to be that person that like they speak English at school and then maybe they go to church with mom and dad, who they worship in a different language.
Right. Yeah.
And I have a friend that like the way in which she kind of like painted that picture to me of like, I am literally one language at school and one language at home. Yes.
Happens a lot,
but having to choose what language I worship in.
Ooh.
And so I'd love to ask you, like, do you ever have moments where like you sing song, like did they ever jump like English to Korean or Japanese? Yeah. Like what does that look like?
It's so funny. And
like what language or voice or song does God sing over you?
Yeah.
Is it all or what? Yeah.
You know, believe it or not. So when I pray, like it's always in Korean.
Okay, okay.
I mean, at church when I'm in a pulpit, I say English. But sure, like sure. In my head, like when
but,
I'm
but your heart language, Heather, head language, every yeah, time. Yeah.
Prayer as well, my personal prayer like that as well. Even when I do my sermon prep.
Okay.
Even with the American curriculum, I open the Korean Bible first.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's just yeah. the Korean side of me because, you know, yeah. I only lived there 5 years if you think about it, but just, I don't know. It's just, I think language-wise, it was always my first language. Yeah.
It was your first language.
Yeah. Yeah. But I just think, and I love how you said about the second gen, like there are so many kids and families where at school you're American and you go home and you yeah. are Spanish, Korean, Chinese, mm-hmm. or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely difficulty in that, but at the same time, it's just also beautiful that, you know, the word of God yeah. is now translated into many, many yes. different languages.
Yeah.
And I just think there's so much beauty in that. And whenever I think to myself, God, why did you give me this unique gift of having three different languages?
Yeah.
You know, what I'm thinking is, man, I want to be the 300% person to be able to preach in three different languages one day.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
yeah, I just always trying to think positive and trying to be a pioneer and, you know, help all those second gens to just hear the gospel in different ways.
Yeah. Is there any word of encouragement you'd give to a youth pastor that maybe has yeah. some students maybe their church is trying to sort it out and figure it yeah. out, but maybe there is a grouping of third culture kids Absolutely. That whether it's Spanish, Chinese, Korean, mm-hmm. like how can we better serve them, encourage yeah. them? What's a word that you would give a youth pastor trying to do right by them?
Yeah. And as a guy who was serving as a youth intern, even at an immigrant church, like I really understand the pain of what it's like to pastor the kids who are third culture or second gen or even kids who don't speak English. But I think my words of encouragement is, man, like when I was a teenager, I had to go to church sometimes and there's this like one English guy and I didn't speak any English back then. It was just not that good, right? And there's this guy who was always so patient. He was always so kind. He always prayed over me. And sure, the connection wasn't there. He probably thought I was not warm. He probably thought I was cold. Mm. But man, I just felt the love and genuine care from this man.
Yeah.
So I just want other youth pastors to experience and know the fact that, hey, it's not just always a language barrier or even the cultural barrier. Like, hey, like God's love always surpasses that.
Yeah.
So, you know, keep pastoring them, keep loving them, keep praying for them. Like they are going to know. Mm. And it's going to make difference in their life.
That's awesome,
man. Yeah.
Well, I want to bring your friend back up because one of the things that we're going to talk about is mentorship
mm-hmm.
and just some of the people that God brings yes, along absolutely. Our way. And yeah. so I want to open to you and just kind of hear some of the things that have been kind of passionate for you
mm-hmm.
Because part of how we got connected and some of the conversations yes. and some of the things that just drive the ways in which we keep up with each other have been kind of mentoring questions. Who are some of the people along the way that have been those mentors, those key questions, those key moments that maybe you didn't even know you were looking for
yeah.
that found you, but like what has mentorship looked like in your growing minute? Cause again, that's again, part of the unique situation of maybe growing up and knowing stories of faith and scripture,
Absolutely.
But Jesus becoming real, like being saved just in the last few years. Like what is that created a need for, and absolutely. How has mentoring been a part of that?
100%. Yeah, absolutely. So I think I should kind of go back to the years in Moody. So
yeah.
after serving at immigrant church for a couple of years, being in Moody for a year, 2.5 years later, after serving immigrant church, I left immigrant church really hoping to like learn and grow. And I had applied to Gospel Life Church. They had an opening at student pastor position.
Yeah.
And I heard about it, met the pastors. Everything went great. Right. And I had a final interview with the family, with the parents. And then I left the meeting, now waiting for my contract and seeing when I'm going to start.
Yeah.
And my executive pastor calls me to my to his office and say, hey, I just talked to the parents. We just don't think you're the right candidate.
Oh, okay.
It was like getting punched right in the nose.
But you were like, but I killed it back there. It was so good.
I know, yeah. right? I was like, whoa, what do you mean? Like, yeah. I have a bachelor's degree. I have a master's degree.
Yeah.
Like, man, like,
this
I know I can
good.
Crush
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, man. And then it was really tough. And the day after, the other campus pastor, his name is Pastor Austin, he called me to his coffee shop. And, like, it was, like, the hardest conversation of, like, hey, like, I see the biggest potential in you, but you're not there yet. But come join as an intern or whatever, the resident, like we will develop you to become a young, sharp leader.
Okay.
And by the way, this was 25-year-old man who needed a full-time job.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who had the degrees that everyone
you're
was
like, actually,
for.
I have school debt. So let's, yeah.
Yeah. No, but then like I went home and I just called my dad and I said, hey dad, like I thought this whole job thing fell through, and do I just look for a new job, or this church, they're willing to pour into me, they're willing to develop me, but like I also gotta pay the bills. And my father said in Korean, saying, Daniel, make a decision in your life that in 10 years later you will look back and say, I'm so glad I made the decision. So I told my girlfriend, who became my wife.
Yeah.
Girlfriend at the time.
Yeah. My favorite phrase. Yeah, yeah.
And I said, hey, I'm going to do this thing. Part-time but full-time internship at Gospel Life. Yeah. I'm making almost no money. And she thought I was crazy, but, and I still did it. And man, that was the best decision I made in my life. And in the first week of that, just going into this internship, as you can imagine, I'm bothered. I'm like, man, like my ego hurt. I'm like, I cannot play. Like I'm going to this job that I didn't get.
Yeah.
And now I have to start from the rock bottom.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's on top of my ego being hurting. My executive pastor calls me to his office once again. And he says, hey, like, I want you to meet with this guy named Dave twice a month as your life mentor.
Okay.
You make an initiative. Here's a phone number.
You just got assigned to Dave. They're like, we have Dave for you. Yeah.
And I need to give a little context here. This guy called Dave was the guy who was in my final interview as a youth pastor, who went to my lead pastor and say, this guy should not be the youth pastor.
God, Veto Dave.
I'm like, wow, this guy's trying to write some Korean drama or something. Yes, I'm like, this is wild. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. And then as you can imagine, man, the meeting I had with him, he became my life mentor, but I didn't know how to begin. It's like, what does that even mean? I never had mentors in my life.
Yeah.
The whole development, like pouring out all these whatever lingo that church is using. Like, I'm not used to that.
God, doesn't it feel like code words sometimes?
Absolutely.
We're just like, wait, what are we talking about? Yeah,
it feels like someone's filming. I'm like, are you like recording this?
Right.
But
we're just here to like set you on a path.
Yeah.
Of just like, you know, improvement. You're like, wait, are you firing me? No, man. We just want to like.
Dude, that's so true.
It happens.
No, man. But yeah. And then we met. It was super awkward. And I was like.
Yeah, what were those meetings like?
It was like.
I can't. I don't have a lot of thoughts that are positive about mandatory meetings.
So, I know. Exactly. Yeah. And I remember leaving the first meeting. I was like, okay, this is not going to work out. At the first part, I was, this ain't it. But, you know, but then I wanted to be teachable. I wanted to just, at that point, I was like, man, whatever they ask me to do, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to crush it. And I'm going to do a really good job so that I can learn. And, I kept meeting, and man, like the meeting became so much better. Mm. It became so much fruitful. And again, this is a guy who thought that I was not going to be a good youth pastor. He was just giving really hard conversations. And I think he was such a great guy to be accountable. He asked a lot of questions, hard questions about purity. I was not married at the time. He's like, man, how are you doing with that?
Yeah.
Right? How are you doing with your walk with the Lord? He was not managing my ministry or youth ministry, but he just gave me a really good insight as a parental perspective. And you know, it was just amazing. He just kept me humble, and it just allowed me to still be teachable, still fear God, and not let my arrogance or my pride get in my way, because he would always call me out in a godly way.
It was
amazing, and it eventually became such a great like friendship now, where he actually got to pray over me when I got installed as a student pastor, because church was like, in 2 months after getting mentorship, they were like, hey, like, we should have you be a student pastor, which is why I'm still here right now.
Yeah.
He prayed over me for student installation. He sat on my ordination council, and he also prayed over me for my ordination as a pastor. I baptized his kid, and I also prayed over him at his elder installation. So it's such a beautiful story that was drawn like from a weird mandatory mentorship that became a huge win in my life. So this is why, Zach, I think the reason why I'm talking about mentorship is like, I believe personally.
Yeah.
And I know we hear the word mentorship in
so many ways.
So many ways. And it's like, oh yeah, of course, you get it. I think every single young youth pastor listening to this have to have mentor in their life. And it has to be discipline.
Yeah.
I guess passionate about
that would be the
it.
Thing, because I think a lot of folks are going to hear what you said and like, well, I have a guy.
Right. Exactly.
And it's the thing that we hear a lot in conversations in youth ministry boosters. Like, they have a network.
Yes.
They stick, you know, if they wanted to reach out, they could, or they'll have a couple coffees. Like, but again, to take the lesson learned from Dave, like, that's far more intentional and almost like frictional.
Oh, 100%.
And so what are some of the ways in which you would like as someone who has benefited from encourage someone else to like, I mean, let's not use the code words. Let's use the real words.
Yes,
submit
let's do it.
To that kind yes. of mentoring. Yeah. Like,
right.
Again, because it wasn't what you signed up for. It's right. what they handed out to you. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say, so right now, whenever in my student ministry setting, when I have a lot of college students who want to internship with me, I make it mandatory too.
Mm.
Like I don't let it slide. I say, hey, I'll mentor your ministry stuff, but you need to have a life mentor.
And that life mentor is not you.
Oh, it's not me.
It's not it you always, because yeah. it's not based on the ministerial work. It's right. It literally is that life.
Because I want it to be life mentor.
Okay.
Even
so who are those
professor.
People? So who are those people? How do you pair them? How do you recruit them? Mm-hmm. How do you pair them? How do you equip them?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, just work in ministry, I always have a list of 20 godly men, godly women in my notebook all the time.
Yeah.
So, and you know, I usually have like 5 to 6 interns every semester. So I really make it mandatory. Like I just really believe that I don't really encourage it. I honestly feel like it's a must.
It's a must. No.
And you said it too. A lot of guys, I don't think anyone would say I hate mentoring.
Yeah.
Of course they won't.
Yeah.
And they will all say, oh, I have a guy. I have a guy I can call anytime I want.
Yeah.
But I think it needs to be a part of discipline. And I think a lot of people need to stop waiting for mentors to make an initiative and you make an initiative.
Yeah.
Like if you are the youth pastor, like I just believe the calling as a pastor, we talk about calling all the time. When I read the book of 2 Timothy, a man whose life is above reproach.
Yeah.
Like, man, to get there, we have to be held accountable.
Yeah.
Meaning at least once a month, twice a month, like, you need to make an initiative for this guy to keep calling you. Hey, like, keep, like, pour into me.
Scrub
like
me out. Clean
yes,
me out. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And also call me out.
You call me out.
Like,
yeah.
you need that. Yeah. Especially young guys. Like,
well, because you... Yeah. We naturally resist accountability.
Absolutely.
And that is something... And you see, we see it in our students, and we pray against it, and we hope differently. But I think that we have to be active... or activate in a way in which that we are seeking it so that we have the confidence to speak about it. Because I do think that's one of the danger traps of ministry is it's always like wishful of like, I hope you will.
Yeah.
Or maybe one day, but it needs to be so grounded and lived in your own life that when you talk about the importance of confession, you've just come from a place of confessing.
Yeah.
So what are some of the things that like for those relationships, maybe either from either your experience with Dave or for the intern folks that you have, those care formation things.
Yeah.
Give us the cheat sheet. What are the questions? What are the hard topics?
Mm-hmm.
Is it as simple as, your mind, your heart, your body, your finances? Like what are some of those life areas that we need to be scraped clean?
Right. I mean, I'll be honest with you, man. Like I have a personality of like, I love honesty and transparency and also being raw.
Yeah.
Right. But I also respect that. Hey, for some people, it might be a little too much for me to get the same thing as I receive.
Yeah.
Right. However, one thing that I always encourage, so when I pair my intern with a mentor, I always call the mentor as well saying, hey, I have this girl or this guy who wants to learn ministry for 6 months here in student ministry. Would you be willing to meet this person once a month for coffee or really help them accountable? 100% of the time, they say yes. Every single time, right? And every single time they say yes, and I always give them a list of 3 or 4 questions. One of them is purity because they're all usually young guys. This is all for the young guys. I'm not saying old guys don't need mentors, but I believe especially young pastors.
Yes.
Oh, I want to be in ministry.
Yes.
You all... always need someone who's going to hold you accountable.
Yeah.
And I always ask about purity, and I love to use for finance. I think same for finance.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm not saying tell me how much you make. What are you spending?
Not to make money, but where again, in the same way, where do your eyes go? Where do your money go?
Like, yes.
These are tells for like, you know, how you spend your time, what you watch online, what you listen to, how you spend your money.
Right.
You've already told me a lot.
I think those are things, right? I think those are also mentioned a lot in the Bible. Man, money is mentioned a lot in the Bible.
It
lust.
Lust and also, when Paul hits the vice list, money and sex, top of the list every time.
Every day, bro. Every time. So those two. And the last thing is, how are you doing with the, like, walk with your Lord?
Yeah.
How's your prayer life? How's your reading? And I just recently was watching one of the podcasts, and this guy made a fantastic comment where he said, discipline... beats passion.
Yeah, every time.
I feel like youth pastors all have passions. I have passions, man. Like, I'm all in.
Yeah.
But I think it's, if you're young and you're crushing it, especially in the field, like, we have to have the discipline.
Well, and the thing about discipline that's so powerful is it helps to increase the capacity for the passion.
Mm.
Like, one of the things that we use as a teaching example with some of our booster members is that your calling is like a cup. And so you can either keep filling the cup or try to get a bigger cup,
right?
Because it cup's always pouring out. Like, you're always pouring the cup out, and you got to keep refilling the cup.
Right.
And so one of the ways to do it is just to keep refilling the cup
over and over.
Mm-hmm. Another way is to increase the capacity of the cup,
mm-hmm.
and the capacity of the cup is not your passion, because passion will come and go.
That's good.
Willpower will be refreshed.
Yeah.
But the discipline of, hey man, it's 6 a.m. we're going to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
Hey man, it's before bed, the phone's off and we're praying. Like, some of these things we do because they are, and it's exactly the life mentor thing.
Right.
It's who we are.
Right.
Because it's what we've always done. And I think that we leave too much of our faithfulness up to our choice when it should be a matter of both patience and provision.
That's good, man.
So,
okay, man, I love it.
So, what are some of the discipline things that are true in your life? So, if we're gonna model it for some of our friends here, from Dave to Dan, what are some of the discipline things that are trumping passion for you right now?
Like,
what are the
things
you're held to?
One of the things is reading, reading the Word. I my biggest repentance I had in 2024 is I used my sermon prep time as my devotional.
Okay,
and I just had a really like big moment, just my personal conviction with God of like, man, this is not good.
It was always for somebody else.
Right.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good. That's good. And another thing is just honoring my marriage. Like that has to come.
Recently married. Like,
Months ago, man.
Hey, man, dude. Right, I had to congrats, right. man.
I know. Yeah, I already missed my wife, man. It's my, yeah.
But, we're not away. We're here. Yeah.
Right. That's true. But like just those stuff, you just help me keep telling me like, hey, don't forget. Before your pastor, your husband, your family must live before your ministry live in.
Mm.
Man, those wise words, Zach, like I just feel like I was able to grow a lot, even at such a young age because of those things.
Mm.
And I think it just breaks my heart. I think I told you earlier, is like so many young leaders just fall apart because they were not held accountable.
Mm.
Because the temptation is real. Like, evil wants us to quit. They want to, like keep tempting us. And I wish I had strength to do everything on my own strength, but I just believe that God has given us the brothers and sisters to encourage one another as a community. And like, that's why the mentorship thing is not cliche for me. So like, I said this to someone and they're like, oh, mentorship? Are you going to talk about that again? That's boring.
Mm.
And I went to Global Leaders Summit in the summer, and Craig Rochelle says, hey, the next generation of leadership right now is going to be the boring leadership.
Mm.
Like, let's get back into discipline.
Yeah.
Like, let's get back loving our family. Like, let's get back loving our students, and just let's go back to the basics and stay disciplined. And man, those have been really helpful.
Good word, man. It's good. Mm-hmm. Well, dude, thank you so much for coming to hang out today.
Appreciate that.
On the way out, we got a gathering of young leaders we've been hanging out with.
Mm-hmm.
I know that we're sharing some of the things in some of our next sessions that are like interest to you.
Mm-hmm.
Piquing your curiosity, putting you to research. Give us a little bit for the folks listening. What is something that from a young leader to maybe someone who's either older, been doing it for a long time,
mm-hmm.
what's something that you're paying attention to or is curious to you
mm-hmm.
that you would want to have their eyes, their study, their mm-hmm. learning on?
Recently, I read an article that talks about the average average years of youth pastors staying in church youth ministries 18 months.
Yeah.
And man, I was heartbroken.
Mm.
It really broke my heart as a next gen guy. And just seeing that that's a national average really broke my heart. And I wish I had a solution to that issue.
Mm.
But just as we talked about mentorship, which I'll bring it up tomorrow as well, like I feel like it could be a small factor to help the young leaders realize, hey, like at times, even if it's hard, you also need resilience.
Yeah.
Like green is, the grass is not always greener.
Yeah. That's right. Right. That's right.
And also, sometimes ministry is hard, and I'm not saying this to minimize any of the pains that people experience in ministry at all. However, at times, like, you know, we're living in the stages of sanctification and we have to learn how to disagree well. And we also have to suffer well. So, and this is not, again, to, you know, degrade any of the pains or struggles that people may face in a church setting. But I just wish more young leaders are able to have resilience in a ministry setting and love on their students more than 18 months. That's kind of where my heart is at night. And I don't have an answer yet. Maybe Zach and Chad can help me out, guys. But
dude, I don't have an answer, but I will say that the notion of suffering well is something that I think that a generations of ministers are going to have to recover.
Absolutely.
There is a quality to that that is unmistakable. And unavoidable that those that have called into ministry in the study of scripture time and time again, from the patristic fathers to the prophets, to Jesus himself, that suffering seems inevitable for those that would long to be faithful in a world that's not. So doesn't make it easier.
I know.
But puts us in good company.
Yes, sir. That's right. That's right. You're right, man. So absolutely. Dan,
if folks wanted to follow up with you, connect with you more, what's the best way to do that online?
You can email me. My Instagram is Danny_in_Tokyo. The guy from Tokyo. So,
good.
We'd love to connect with you. Hit me up at any question. And good, thank you so much for having me, Zach.
All right, man. We'll see you all next week. Dan, thanks so much, buddy. We'll see you next week.
Yeah. Yes, sir. See you later.
Thanks, everybody.